Hi, it's Michael Senoff with Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. The title of this interview is called How to Parent with Purpose and Give Your Child the Spark They Need to Succeed. According to Dr. William Damone, child psychologist and author of The Path to Purpose, Helping Our Children Find Their Challenge in Life, our school system is set up to churn out adults minimally confident about a lot of things, but not expertly passionate about anything. He says that because most schools are dreary places, unconnected to the communities they sit in or the children they serve, children end up having no clue why they need to take tests or learn things and lose one of the strongest keys there are to success, motivation. So Dr. Damone studied highly successful children to find out what motivated them and how they were different. And in this audio interview, you'll hear what he found in his study and the simple way you can help your children find their path to purpose. You'll also hear the real reason a lot of entrepreneurial types don't finish college, but go on to direct blockbuster hits and start a company like Apple or Microsoft. You'll hear simple steps parents can take for kids who just don't seem interested in anything to help them find their passion and purpose in life. You'll hear everyday activities parents can do with their children that help them feel connected to their family, community, and know their actions matter and why that's so important. You'll see the ideal picture of what school should be like when it comes to producing enthusiastic, confident, goal-oriented children. You'll hear specific ways you can help your children know what their passion is and how to help them develop it. You'll also hear the importance of holding high expectations for your kids, but how to do it the right way so they're not constantly looking over their shoulder just to please mom or dad. Look, we all want to raise motivated, self-directed kids with energy and spark, and the good news is we can. We just need to help them feel connected to their community, encourage them to develop their talents, and give them the resources to flourish. And in this audio interview, you'll hear exactly how to do that. Now let's get going.
Hi, this is Chris Costello, and I've teamed up with Michael Senoff to bring you the world's best health-related interviews. So if you know anyone struggling with their weight, with cancer, diabetes, ADHD, autism, heart disease, or other health issues, send them over to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. And today we are talking with William Damone. Bill, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Chris.
So you are one of the leading authorities on child development and written an exciting new book called The Path to Purpose, Helping Our Children Find Their Calling in Life. And we are so excited to be talking with you today.
Well, thanks. Yeah, the book has gotten a lot of attention, and I think it's really the first time anybody has looked at this very central part of human life from a developmental point of view, which is how do people actually go about finding what they dedicate their lives to, especially when they're young. And, of course, youth is a formative period of human development. So we were fortunate enough to be able to explore that and wrote the book based on the studies that we did.
Yeah, and the book is based on the findings of the Youth Purpose Project. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that was all about?
Sure. We got started about 10 years ago and started small, like all things should start, with just finding a few very extraordinary young people who really have been doing amazing things with their lives. For example, one young teenager who, by the age of 12, had started a foundation to help build wells, drinking water wells, for villages in Africa where families don't have enough water. And this boy, on his own initiative, raised money, went to Africa, oversaw the building of these wells. These are very unusual kids, and we found about a dozen of them who we got to know a bit, interviewed them, read whatever we could find about them, and got the general idea of what's possible during early parts of life. What kind of inspiration and dedication and achievement and aspiration is possible in the kids that really, really have a full sense of what they're after, a full sense of what they're trying to accomplish in life and why. So that's where we started. And then, of course, we asked the question that everyone's interested in, which is, what about ordinary kids? Do they have purpose? Do they have any purpose at all? Which ones do? The ones that don't have purpose, why are they having trouble? And what difference does it make? Does it matter that a young person has something to believe in or has some big goal in life? What difference does it make? So these are all the questions we asked, and we went around the country. We studied and surveyed and interviewed young people between the ages of 12 and 22 about what their lives meant to them and what their goals were and what they saw themselves doing 10 years from now, 20 years from now, whether they were satisfied with their lives, whether they were still looking for something that they hadn't found yet. And based on all of that, we wrote up some studies. We followed the kids for another 4 years until the oldest of them was 26. And then I wrote the book. I wrote the book, The Path to Purpose, describing the state of purpose among young people in America today.
And I want to really get into, you know, you've got some great, great information in The Path to Purpose. But I'd like to start with just asking you, because I know you're an expert on this, what is going on with kids in America today? I mean, we hear so much about suicide rates and kids playing video games. What's your take on that, Bill?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I've got to say is that there is no single letter or adjective that can describe the whole generation. This stuff about Generation X or Y or the Millennials or the Odysseys or the Dumbest Generation, all of these catchwords are really caricatures.
And if we do that, we're going to sound really old.
Yeah, that's one thing. And out of touch. Yeah, it's very fragmented. There are a number of young people. We find about 1 in 5 who are absolutely shining with purpose and dedication. They know where they're headed. They're learning about the skills they need to learn in order to get there. And that's about 20% of the population, and that's very important. And then on the whole other extreme, we find about 1/4 of the young people scattered across the country, of course. This is a national survey with every possible group represented. But about 1 in 4 on a national basis haven't found anything and aren't even particularly looking. They've either given up or they're apathetic or maybe they're hedonistic or just having a good time and they don't see goals as part of their life at all. This leaves a lot of kids in the middle, maybe 60%, who would like to find something, who are experimenting with a lot of things. Some of them are actually really great kids that are real busy. You know, they're doing their piano lessons and their soccer and getting good grades. But they haven't really found anything to dedicate themselves to, and nothing they're doing is providing a whole lot of meaning for their lives. And these are the kids sometimes who are pretty stressed out because they're looking for something they haven't found. They feel sometimes pressured externally to be active and do all these things. They're good kids. They're doing it, but they're not getting a lot of satisfaction out of it. And I would say that those are the mass of kids in the middle who are probably the most typical group. Although, as I said, you've got to also remember there are these other two groups, both the very purposeful kids and the totally drifting, non-purposeful kids that are an important part of the picture, too.
That gets me to, in Path to Purpose, you talk a lot about parenting for purpose. And I really want our listeners to be able to hear, you know, what can parents do that's really going to help them encourage and nurture their kids?
Yeah, we exactly took a look at what the parents of the really purposeful kids were doing. And it comes to a number of bullets that I describe much more in detail in the book. But to kind of simplify it, number one, the parents are really getting to know the kids well enough that they can recognize what is the spark that your child has. Every child has a spark. Every child has something that they're potentially passionate about. Some interest. It could be anything. It could be something serious that they study in school, you know, geometry or literature or something like that. Or it could be something that they look into outside of school. One child that we studied got interested in cooking and food because she kept going to a French restaurant and got fascinated by how the chef made sauces. And she continued with this interest for 10 years. So it could be things that may be hard to recognize, but what the parents are doing is taking a look and doing a lot of listening to what the child finds interesting and inspiring. And then, once the parent has recognized what that spark is, the parents give the kids a lot of support and resources. For example, that child I just mentioned, eventually the parents sent the kid to a summer camp to learn cooking, even though the parents were not particularly enthralled initially. They would have much rather had her go into math and science or something like that. So the parents are listening, they're following the child's lead in the sense that they're providing support and resources child wants to do. And they're also providing the kid with a lot of good role models, including themselves, people that can really tell the child, look, here's what you need to do practically to learn the skills, to develop the kind of knowledge that you'll need in order to make this dream of yours into reality. What the parents are not doing is giving the kid the purpose. I will say that. We very rarely find that the parents are saying, look, this is what you should do in life. You should be a doctor, you should be a lawyer, or something like that. That doesn't seem to work, but what does work is when the child brings himself to it or herself to it, and the parents then provide the encouragement that the kid needs.
How do you avoid going from supportive, encouraging parent to pushy parent? We have an 8-year-old, and he recently has been designing buildings and cities with Google SketchUp or something, some program. And I said to my husband, did you teach him this? He said, no, no. I said, oh, wow. I was surprised. The kid is really talented. And I found myself very quickly going, well, don't you want to sit down and do that? Don't you want to design today? No, no, you know. So how do you avoid that?
I don't think anybody can avoid it 100% perfectly, and that's not needed. Parents don't have to be perfect, but it does help to be sensitive. And the kids will give you a lot of signals. Really, in most cases that we looked at, the child was going to the parent for help or advice or support when the child needed it. And the parents that were being responsive were the ones that got a lot of result as far as the child's development was concerned. But the parents don't really need to do much more than make an offer every now and then and to let the child know that I'm available or this is something that we can encourage and we can support. As far as sort of getting on the kid's back and saying you should do this or you should do that, you know, it just isn't that effective, and it really can have a counter effect. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't things that children need to do out of responsibility, and I don't want to indicate that. In other words, children have their responsibilities, and they need to do their homework, they need to do chores around the house, that's what the parents are asking, they need to live their life responsibly. So there are times when parents do need to exercise their legitimate authority and say, you know, you need to go to bed at this time, you need to clean up or do whatever. But as far as finding purpose in life and finding a lifelong passion and goal, that's an area where a heavy-handed parent is not going to have a positive effect.
For more interviews on health, mind, body, and spirit, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. It seems to me to be a very subtle process also. I seem to notice as soon as my son realized that I had been completely amazed and now blown away by this talent.
Yeah, well, a lot of what kids are looking for is validation by people other than parents, peers, and teachers. And so a parent can only do so much on that score.
And so, Bill, in Path to Purpose, you also talked about schools. And I'm wondering, what do you think about our school system now? And what do schools need to do to create kids that are engaged and really interested in what they're doing?
Well, one thing, and it's not happening in a lot of schools these days, unfortunately, but one thing is bringing the child inside on the question of why it is that we're asking them to do what they're being asked to do. In other words, a lot of activity in schools these days have to do with learning to take tests well. Now, testing is important, and I'm not anti-test, but tests are a means to an end. They're not an end in themselves. And too often these days, especially in a lot of public schools, tests are being presented as the end. This is the reason that you're studying. This is why you're here, is to get a good grade or a good score in this test and then to move on to the next set of tests that will come up in following grade. That is not going to inspire anybody. And it's too infrequent to have teachers say, look, you know, you're learning science because here's what we do with science in the world. Here's the human uses of, or even to say what it is that any of these skills are leading towards. What kind of jobs, what kind of vocations, what kind of life this will bring you to master these skills. And to understand that the tests are meant to give you feedback. They're meant to give you an understanding of how well you've learned something, not just as the accomplishment that you're aiming all your efforts towards. And I think that's one of the reasons that kids get so bored and apathetic in school, is because they don't really find any meaning in what they're doing, and they don't see where it's leading. They don't see that it's heading them in a direction that they themselves want to go in. So I think that schools really need to have better conversations with kids about what I call in the book the why question, which is, why am I doing this? begun. They're not already insiders in the system, and they haven't already bought into all of the reward structures, incentives, and all of that. So they're just saying, well, I don't know, why should I do this stuff? And we got to provide the better answers to that question.
And what about the question of creating environments where they really highlight kids' strengths? Because one of the things we've noticed from years of interviewing best-selling authors and physicians and people that have achieved amazing things is they focus pretty early on what they're interested in and what they want to do. And it seems in our schools it's all about being a generalist. I don't know if that necessarily creates that sense of purpose.
Yeah, I agree with you. That, again, is another problem with the incentives that are built into schools right now. We reward kids for knowing a little bit about a lot of things and being able to pass the minimal level, the minimal standard on a whole range of subjects. And if a child gets passionate about music or about sports or about anything, we don't really give the child the freedom to explore that in the kind of depth that will really bring satisfaction. And by the way, that's one of the reasons that you see so many successful entrepreneurs not even finishing college, for example. They get really excited about what they're doing, and they go out and they start Facebook or Apple Computer or Microsoft or go direct a movie. And I think part of that is because they're not finding the freedom to really explore in depth. And, of course, these people are success stories, so there's nothing wrong with the route they've gone. But a lot of kids who aren't able to move in this successful entrepreneurial direction just drift, spend years never really finding something that they can do that they're proud of, that makes a contribution, that will make them a good living. And I think that is, as you said, in large part because we've set up a system that is creating a lot of dilettantes, people who are just minimally competent about a bunch of stuff, but who have never really had the opportunity to develop their passion and their talent to something that will really make a difference in their lives and for the world.
And it seems like with the schools, a lot of times we focus on the disabilities. I mean, often those disabilities come with incredible gifts and visual gifts and design gifts. And I often see the, well, these public schools overlooking that element.
Yeah, we need to individualize instruction much more than we're doing, and to recognize that there are lots and lots of different gifts, and I used the word earlier, lots of different types of sparks that can set a child off in a very positive direction. And if you focus on those assets, and that's one of the movements that we have helped start in the field of child development, is called the Positive Youth Development Movement. The acronym is PYD, and it's, I think, a growing part of the youth development culture right now. Probably the last 10 years has seen a real upswing in people accepting this. And the idea really is to focus our attention on the assets of young people and not on their deficits, and not just see that we're trying to correct a lot of things they're doing wrong or fill in a lot of gaps in their knowledge, but rather start with what their talents are and give them an opportunity to develop those in the most creative and full-blown way possible. So that's a whole movement, and it has to do with health as well and behavior, not just learning. Again, seeing young people as assets for their community, not as problems.
I know our listeners will be excited to hear about that. And what's the name of that group one more time, Bill?
We call it the Positive Youth Development Movement, PYD. And there are some people, one person is Peter Benson, who runs the Search Institute in Minnesota, Richard Lerner from Tufts University, and we've had meetings about this for about 10 or 15 years, but the good news is that I think a lot of people are getting on board with this now. So you will hear this phrase quite a bit now. Even the National Science Foundation now has a program in funding positive youth development kind of research. So I think people are getting the message. And it's a positive message. It's a message that young people have a lot to offer. And if we think about what that is and how each individual child has their own particular thing to offer, and not to overlook that or try to rubber stamp and act as if one size fits all or one mold fits all, but really celebrate the special gift of every child. That's the way to maximize human potential.
So, Bill, you've written Path to Purpose, and what do you say to the parents that have kids out there that are struggling that just don't seem interested in anything? How do they start? What are some simple steps that they can start with their kids?
Well, actually, in the Path to Purpose, I give some sample conversations that parents can have with children, especially a kid that comes home from school and says, nothing much happened in school today. And parents as well. Was there anything interesting? Nah. Which is kind of typical. I've had three kids. I've had that conversation with each of them many times. And in the path of purpose, I give some examples of some kinds of questions that parents can ask, at least start the kid to communicate about the one or two things that maybe he or she did find interesting, and then take it from there. But apart from the conversation, step number one is having those conversations. And by the way, creating occasions for those conversations. So I'm not the first person to say this, but you know, if you can have dinner with your kids instead of just everyone kind of hitting the refrigerator at different times, that is an occasion where you can actually have a conversation about what is cool, what's interesting. What did I find interesting in my day? What did you find interesting in your day? Where does that lead? So the conversations are important, and parents can have those conversations, be good listeners, ask a lot of good questions, and as I said, in the path to purpose, I give examples of probing questions that you can ask and create occasions to have them. But the other thing that I want to add to conversations is that you can actually do things in action with kids that bring a lot of these things out. Joint activities, going on a camping trip with your kid, or going down to the neighborhood food fair, or volunteering in the community, or even watching a television show, the same TV show, which is something amazingly parents and kids don't do very much together because they have different interests. If parents are really concerned about communicating with kids and helping draw kids out in a way that helps them find a good direction in life, you've got to make the effort to do things that maybe you wouldn't necessarily be spending time on yourself, but to do things with your child that the child finds interesting. And then use that as an opportunity to give feedback, to share your experience, your information that you have about this, and get these conversations started that will eventually lead the child to ideas about what directions and activities can be meaningful in life.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. And Bill, what do you see in the kids that do have the path to purpose? You know, some from even a very early age. We're seeing a lot of prodigies now. And what kind of characteristics do you see in those kids?
A lot of energy. And it's energy of a very particular kind, which is not stressful energy. One of the amazing things that we see is that these kids that are really purposeful, that are juggling a million things at once in terms of their own creating, for example, the kid that created the foundation for building wells in Africa, or getting involved in environmental movements, or learning to develop new scales in jazz music. I mean, these are all examples of high aspirations that keep these kids very, very busy, almost 24/7, but in not a stressful way, because they're in a state of flow, as the psychologist Mihai Csikszentmihalyi has called it, where they are getting an amazing amount of enjoyment and satisfaction out of this intense energy they're putting into things. And it is such a sharp contrast with the kids that are coming home with their homework and trying to squeeze in their music lessons and their other requirements in life and don't particularly know why they're doing any of it. And those are the kids we see that are stressed out and anxious and always looking over their shoulder, wondering if they're doing a good enough job to please their parents. But the purposeful kids are not operating that way. They are self-directed, self-motivated, and their energy has a very positive, almost glowing quality to it.
And creativity takes a certain amount of downtime, doesn't it?
Well, sure. It also doesn't always look like, you know, kind of serious, clenching your teeth kind of work. There's a lot of fun involved.
So, Bill, in Path to Purpose, you also talk a lot about schools. And I want to ask you, what do our schools need to do to help create kids that have a path, that have a strong sense of purpose?
One thing would be to give the kids a chance to do more self-directed work and to allow the kids to work on projects that would lead somewhere. And the projects, if they're being done well in a learning sense, if the school's structuring them the right way, they would include a lot of learning about math and literature and all of the basic skills, but they would give the child a sense that they're accomplishing something. And I'll just give you a couple of examples of that. Some are very common. For example, writing a classroom newsletter, for example, or even a school newspaper if classes to do that, and teaching writing that way, where the child then can see a published article or even a published little paragraph that comes out under his or her name that actually communicates something about the world to people that people can read and learn from. And it gives the child, again, a sense that there's a purpose to what you're doing, not just a meaningless exercise. I've also seen classrooms get involved in creating plans to clean up the playground, to build new recreational equipment, all of which involve learning about mathematics, learning about physics, architecture, planning, writing proposals, all of these kinds of real-world skills that teach the very basic skills that we're trying to teach when we focus on literacy and math and so on. So to incorporate learning into exercises that are meaningful to kids, which would be projects and things that actually have consequences, I'm convinced would give children much higher degrees of motivation. And I'll tell you, the greatest missing element in schools today is motivation. If you ask any teacher, anybody that knows students, they say the difference between a kid that's learning well and a kid that just goes blank is whether that child is motivated. And that's the one thing we're paying the least attention to right now in all of our educational policies. So we really need to reform schools so that they find ways to get kids more motivated to learn the things that we know will be important in their lives.
And that word connected comes up for me on that. We've talked with a lot of experts and health experts about the importance, especially Dr. Hollowell, who I'm sure you know, just about the importance of connection. Do we see that in our schools today?
Well, not enough. And, of course, when I'm talking about schools, I'm generalizing. I've been to some very good schools. And so just like when I was talking about kids and saying you can't use one adjective to fit all of them, there are some terrific schools, some very excellent charter schools. I think the KIPP schools have been doing a great job. I think a lot of independent schools for the kids that can afford them are just wonderful environments. But all of these are just a fraction of a fraction of the total number of schools out there. And most schools are pretty dreary places with a lot of kids that are tuned out. And, yeah, the need is to, first of all, connect the school more with the community so that more people like community leaders, parents, other people that have things to offer kids can come in and help out and provide real-life examples of what a successful life looks like. But also to get the kids connected more with each other and with the teacher and with the agenda of the school, which is learning, and to make it clear to students that this is in their interest. This is not something that's being foisted upon them from the outside, but rather that this is for them and that this is part of their own vision, or it should be part of their own vision about how to get to a good life, how to become the kind of person that you want to be, to accomplish the things that you want to accomplish in life. School is an important means towards that end. And when kids come to understand that, they're motivated. And they understand that school will help them fulfill their purpose in life. And that's why it's so important to help young people find a sense of purpose that they can understand what the connection is between following that purpose and the kind of learning that they have the opportunity to do in school.
That is such an important thing, just to that connection. And Bill, you have another book out there that won the Parents' Choice Book Award, and that's Greater Expectations, Overcoming the Culture of Indulgence in Our Homes and Schools. What do you think? Are American kids overindulged, or what's going on with that?
Well, I think that there are a lot of myths about what is good for kids, and one of those myths is that you shouldn't challenge kids too much because it might overpressure them or wound their self-esteem or something like that. And that is a form of indulgence that is very counterproductive because kids thrive on challenges as long as they understand what they're about and as long as they're not too extreme. And what Greater Expectations was about is the idea that if we have high expectations for kids, that will excite them and inspire them. And they will try to rise to those high expectations. And that's what will improve their self-esteem. But if we think that kids are all kind of helpless and they're victims and we have to feel sorry for them, the result of that will be exactly what we don't want, which is a group of kids that will be feeling incapacitated, feeling immobilized, paralyzed, not daring to take on difficult tasks in life. And so The Greater Expectations was really a book about how high standards is really for the benefit of kids and not something that's just an added pressure on their lives.
Yeah, and it seems that often the kids want a sense of purpose.
Kids need to feel that they matter. And that's the major part of the whole ball game, is helping kids to think they can make a difference. And just as you said, one of the earliest ways that a parent can do that in the home is by asking the child to help out and to make the child understand that that's important, that the child really did make a difference by helping to water the plants or empty the dishwasher or do anything. And kids are capable of doing these things at a very young age. And they love the idea that they actually made a difference to mom and dad. It's not like, you know, sending kids off to the labor factories for child labor. Sometimes parents think that if you ask a child to make her own bed, it's like being an oppressive boss. But it's really not like that at all. Kids have time to do this. They may grumble a bit, but in the long run, they'll feel a lot of pride about making a difference in their household. And it contributes to this very basic sense of self that kids need, which is, I matter, the things I do matter. These are important in life. This gives me hope for the future that I can be a real person of value in this world.
Such a great message and such an important one. And Bill, we want to thank you for spending time. And if you would share with our listeners where they can find you and how to find your website.
Sure. My website is simply williamdamon.com. And you can Google me under William Damon. You'll get right to the website.
That's the end of our interview. I hope you found this helpful. For more great interviews on health, wellness, business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.